Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help. When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. But now these days are gone, I'm not so self-assured. Now I find I've changed my mind and opened up the doors. Help me if you can, I'm feeling down, and I do appreciate your being round. Help me get my feet back on the ground. Won't you please, please, help me? Show of hands, how many know what song this is from and who sang it? Okay, a good bunch of you. All right. I'm not one to quote the Beatles. I just don't care for them. I was never a fan of the Beatles. But this song resonates. It resonates not just with me, but I think with everyone. Because no matter how independent and strong any of us are, at some point in time in life, we realize and admit that we need help. And a lot of times we need help and won't admit it. But we need help. So the question is, to whom will we turn when we need help? And we'll talk a little bit more about this song in just a moment. But this morning what we're going to be doing is we're going to wrap up our short series from Genesis 1 and 2. The first series of the first sessions and sermons were from or covering why creation matters. And then the next group was about being made in God's image. And that's kind of what we're wrapping up this morning as we wrap up this idea of being made in God's image. And especially from Psalm 23, because we talked the last two sermons and today, from Psalm 23, we took 11 names of God from the text. And the point of this study was to show not just who God is, but by looking at who God is, learning who we should be. That's why we need to know the names of God, because in this text, it's describing God by what He does. It's giving names of, the names of God are drawn from the things He does for us. And as people made in the image of God, which we looked at in verses 26 and 27 of Genesis 1, we are imagers of God. We are the image of God shown to the world. So when the world sees us, they should be seeing God. And in order for them to see God, we need to know who He is and emulate Him in our lives. Hopefully, by learning the first 10 names that we've already covered, you've gained a greater appreciation for Psalm 23 and for its depth, and have been challenged to show the world who God is. Let's read Psalm 23, and then we'll dive deeper into our lesson this morning. Psalm 23, and I'll just read from the version here on the PowerPoint. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for His name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for You are with me. Your rod and Your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Now, as I said, we've covered 10 of those already. So this morning what we want to do is we want to look at the one that we skipped over last Sunday, and that is the Lord is my shepherd from verse 4, or as it says in the Hebrew, Jehovah Ezer. And you see the connection to the song I had Bob lead for us, Eben Ezer, Jehovah Ezer. And it's Yahweh helps, or Yahweh is my helper. Now, if you recall, in our first lesson, we pointed out that the only actual name of God that's in Psalm 23, literally, is Jehovah Ra, which is universally translated as the Lord is my shepherd. The other 10 names, including the Lord is my helper, come from the actions of God, the things God does for us. And so that includes verse 4, which the latter part there says, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. And that comes out of Jehovah Shema, or Shama, in verse 4, which is, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for You are with me. And we talked at length last week about God being with us and the fact that alleviates fear. It takes away our fear. Here, David is talking about the idea of the symbols of divine strength, the rod and the staff. They bring protection and comfort They show the sheep, the people of God, including David, that God is watching out for them and providing comfort and care for them. Now going back, I said I'd mention this song again. Going back to the song Help by the Beatles in 1965, the writer, it was John Lennon, admitted that when he wrote that song, it was a genuine plea from the heart for help. He and the other Beatles were just so overwhelmed by Beatlemania, and they felt like they had just completely lost control of their lives and the inherent pressure of their popularity. Everywhere they went, they were under somebody's thumb. They were told where to go, what to do, and just never seemed to have any peace or any freedom at all. And so he felt the need, as he was writing this song, even though he's writing it for a movie, as he wrote the song, the idea of, I need help, was deep within his heart. He understood it. Unfortunately, as he admitted, Beatlemania rolled on, and even the song itself, which should have been sung kind of as a lament, was turned into a peppy, upbeat song. If you listen to the song online, it's online, you listen to it, it's a peppy, upbeat song. Though, as you watch the people, the four Beatles in the video, and I would recommend doing this, go watch the video and listen to it. They don't look happy. The only one that looks happy is Paul McCartney. The rest of them look like they don't really want to be there doing that. They needed help, even though they sang it as an upbeat song. They recognize their need for help, and we as Christians, as believers, need to understand and recognize our help, need for help from God. Now, perhaps you're wondering, how does Jehovah Ezer, Jehovah is my help, come from your rod and your staff? They comfort me. Possibly because you struggle with that, because maybe these ideas of this verse and the idea of the rod and staff of God has been maybe presented to you in the past as a reference to punishment for transgressions. But that's really not what he's talking about here in Psalm 23. That's not what that sentence is pointing to. What it's doing is it's referring to the shepherd's staff, which is basically a large walking stick with a hook on one end, and perhaps a piece of metal on the other end, or a hardened end on the other, on the opposite end. The hook is used to catch, or to guide, and catch his sheep. That's what the hook is for. That's what it's designed for. If a sheep starts to stumble, they can reach out and grab it, or if it falls into a hole, they can pull it out, or use that to steady, or bring it back when it's trying to run out of control. That's what that crook is for. It's the guide and catches sheep. And the other end is used as a weapon to drive away threats, to protect from danger. Now, David refers to both ideals here in Psalm 23 when in verse 4. He says, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. He talks about the crook side and then weapon side. Or, as some point out, that there's a short stick that's called a rod that's a little thicker maybe than the shepherd's staff that would be used as a weapon. But either way, the idea here is these are things that are used to help his sheep and protect them from dangers, things that might come along and hurt them. Now, you might have heard of the book called A Shepherd's a Look at Psalm 23. It's out there, and it's a pretty good book. The writer said this when he's talking about the shepherd's staff. He said, in a sense, the staff, more than any other item of his personal equipment, identifies the shepherd as a shepherd. No one in any other profession carries a shepherd's staff. It is uniquely an instrument used for the care and management of sheep, and only sheep. It will not do for cattle, horses, or hogs. It is designed, shaped, and adapted especially to the needs of sheep. So when David, who was a shepherd, writing this psalm, he was recognizing that this is a representative of God's protection and care of him, of his people, and that he sees his people as sheep, those who need protection, those who need to be guided and guarded and protected. That's what he says here that this is for, and it represents that. And I think every one of us would say that we see a hook like a staff like that, we would think of a shepherd's staff. Now, for the believer, knowing God is there with his rod and his staff to catch us when we fall or slip and protect us from threats brings a sigh of comfort. brings us comfort. And it's interesting, you go back to Psalm 23, verse 4, when he says, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. The word comfort is the word sigh. You know that sigh you make? Not in frustration. Every parent does that. You know, when our kids do something we don't appreciate. Or when our husbands, when our wife asks us to do something we don't want to do. They hear that sigh. But that's not the sigh he's talking about. What he's talking about is that sigh of relaxation when you come in and you've been working or you've been working in the house and you sit down and you can just relax for a few moments. Take a load off. That's what he's talking about there. That's the idea of the comfort. It's a very, very literal word. It's a very descriptive word of that sense of relaxation and peace that comes from feeling safe. And it's when we feel safe because God is our shepherd and He is there, He is present to help us, we can sigh in relaxation. We can rest. Well, let's talk a few minutes about this word Ezer, and I want to look at a few Old Testament passages. It's a word that shows up a number of different ways in the Old Testament. The first one, interestingly enough, is from Genesis chapter 2. In Genesis chapter 2, when God is going to make a spouse for Adam, He calls her an helper. In verse 18, He says, it is not good for the man to be alone. I will make him a helper, or Ezer, suitable for him. And then in verse 20, but for Adam there was not found a helper suitable for him. So that idea of helper is the idea of someone who renders aid or assistance or provides for and cares for. And we're going to see that this is a much bigger word than some kind of idea of some subservient person who has no value whatsoever except is just an aid. It's a word that's used most frequently about God, as we're going to see as we work our way through there. And by the way, just as a side note, if you're using the King James Version and it says help meet, or if you're used to the word help meet, it's still two words. It's not one word. Help, suitable, or fitting, or one that fits with and matches up to Adam. That's the kind of helper God made for us. But this word is also used in connection to God, or first used in connection to God, in Genesis 15 and verse 2. I want us to turn over to Genesis 15 and verse 2, where God speaks to Abraham there, and when Abraham's wondering about how he's going to have a descendant, how he's going to have all these descendants when he doesn't even have a child. And it's interesting that God speaks to Abraham, or Abram as he's called here, and he says something to him that kind of preempts the name that Abraham is going to present as his descendant, as his heir. Verse 1 of chapter 15. After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, do not fear, Abram. I am a shield to you. Your reward will be very great. And that word shield is going to show up over and over again in association with the idea of being God's God helping His people. Then in verse 2, Abram said, O Lord God, what will you give me since I am childless and the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus? Eliezer means El, which means God, and Ezer is help. So God is my helper. So this man here is my helper. And God's already kind of preemptively addressed that by saying, I am your shield, Abram. And verse 3, Abram said, since you have given no offspring to me and one born in my house is my heir. Then notice what the Lord says. This guy is not your helper. Then behold, the word of the Lord came to him saying, this man, Eliezer, will not be your heir, but one who will come forth from your own body, he shall be your heir. And so God is already making it clear who is going to be helping Abraham, and it's not going to be this other guy. It's going to be God Himself. Now, this name Eliezer shows up in Exodus 18 and verse 4 as the name of Moses' son. And then after that, it begins to show up frequently, and especially in the Psalms, as a reference to God defending His people. And that connects back to this idea of being a shield. Abraham's wondering, how are you going to protect, how are you going to protect me, even though Abraham had gone and fought with these enemies that had kidnapped Lot and defeated them. And God is appearing to him and said, don't be afraid, Abram. I am your shield. I am watching out for you. And so what we're going to find out is that God is the one who protects from adversaries. Turn over to Deuteronomy 20:33. In Deuteronomy 33, Moses is writing here a psalm of praise of God and blessing upon the nation of Israel. And he goes through the various tribes. And he says some interesting things about God as our helper. In verse 7, he talks about Judah, of the tribe of Judah. Verse 7, "And this regarding Judah, so he said, Hear, O Lord," this is Moses speaking, "Hear, O Lord, the voice of Judah, and bring him to his people. With his hands he contended for them." So he's talking about Judah and what Judah has done. And then he asked God and to bless him. He says in the end of that verse, "And may you be a help," or Ezer, "against his adversaries." So Moses is channeling the comment of God to Abraham as the shield of his people, and particularly here the shield of Judah, for Judah. But now turn over to look at the end of chapter 33, and in verses 26 through 29, and I want you to notice some interesting, very fascinating descriptions of God riding to help, riding on the clouds of heaven, riding on the heavens to assist or help his people. Verse 26, "There is none like the God of Jeshurun, who rides the heavens to your help." So God's coming in the clouds, in the sky, to your help. Talking about the people of Israel. "And through the skies in his majesty, the eternal God is a dwelling place." By the way, just as you read through this, I want you to just pick up in your mind all of the ways God is described here of how he protects and cares for his people. "The eternal God is a dwelling place. And underneath are the everlasting arms. He drove out the enemy from before you and said, Destroy. So Israel dwells in security, the fountain of Jacob secluded in the land of grain and new wine. His heavens also drop down dew. Blessed are you, O Israel, who is like you, a people saved by the Lord, who is the shield of your help, and the sword of your majesty." That's the Lord. And that word Lord there is Yahweh or Jehovah. Jehovah is the shield of your help and the sword of your majesty. So your enemies will cringe before you and you will tread upon their high places. And so he's making it very clear that God is going to come to their help. God is going to be the one who's rescuing them and giving them guidance and caring for them and protecting them. And this is the phrase and idea that is repeated often in the psalm, probably about 25 times or so. This idea of God as Ezer is in the psalms. And so we're not going to read all those, but I do want us to look over to Psalm 115, verses 9 through 11. In fact, if you noticed in the psalm passage read for us by Hunter earlier, Psalm 121, in Psalm 121, it says it twice there in the first verses. But let's go to Psalm 115, verses 9 through 11. And I want you to notice what we see here in Psalm 115. Three times he says this, "O Israel, trust in the Lord. He is their help and their shield. O house of Aaron, trust in the Lord. He is their help and their shield. You who fear the Lord," or Yahweh, "trust in the Lord. He is their help and their shield." So Yahweh is their Ezer, Jehovah Ezer, and their shield. So this is describing God as a helper who is a shield, a protector from attacks, protector from the enemy. He stands in between those who would attack God, or God's people, and the people. He stands in the gap between them and protects his people. That is what God does as our helper. And that's the dominant idea of God as helper, is protecting from enemies. Standing for us and in front of us so that our enemies cannot destroy us. But turn over to 1 Samuel 7, verse 12. This is a passage mentioned in the song that Bob led for us. But in 1 Samuel chapter 7, I want us to look briefly at the events there. If you recall, prior to this, prior to 1 Samuel 7, Eli was a high priest. His sons, Hophni and Phinehas, were evil, and they got the ark captured by the Philistines and got the city of Shiloh destroyed. and Eli's dead, and now there's really no leader. Samuel's still too young to lead. The ark comes, and it sits for about 20 years, sits doing nothing, and there's no indication of any real centralized worship of Jehovah for about 20 years. And then in verse 3, it says, "For it was 20 years, and all the house of Israel lamented after the Lord." So finally they realize, you know what, we're just kind of wandering around here lost. We need a shepherd. Verse 3, "Then Samuel spoke to all the house of Israel, saying, 'If you return to the Lord with all your heart, remove the foreign gods and the Ashtaroth from among you, and direct your hearts to the Lord, or Yahweh, and serve Him alone, and He will deliver you from the hand of the Philistines.'" You want deliverance? You want a shield? Turn to the Lord. Turn to Jehovah. And they listened. They actually listened. Verse 4, "So the sons of Israel removed the Baals and the Ashtaroth and served the Lord alone. Then Samuel said, 'Gather all Israel to Mizpah, and I will pray to the Lord for you.' They gathered to Mizpah and drew water and poured it out before the Lord and fasted that day and said there, 'We have sinned against the Lord.' And Samuel judged the sons of Israel at Mizpah." Samuel's a young man. He's probably in his mid-20s, give or take, a few years. And so he's now stepping up. He'd already been recognized as someone that God was speaking through. But now he's old enough to be a judge and to take leadership role. And so he's leading the people back to God. I want you to notice what happens in verse 7. "Now when the Philistines heard that the sons of Israel had gathered to Mizpah, the lords of the Philistines went up against Israel." So they're there worshiping God. They're gathered to worship God. The Philistines hear about it, and they say, "Well, let's go do something about that. Can't put up with that nonsense of people serving their God. We're going to put them in their place." "And when the sons of Israel heard it, they were afraid of the Philistines." So they didn't have an army, weren't prepared, they were scared. And they cried out to Israel, to Samuel. Verse 8, "Then the sons of Israel said to Samuel, 'Do not cease to cry to the Lord our God for us, that He may save us from the hand of the Philistines.'" So they're calling out, saying, "We need help, and the only place we can get help is from God." "Samuel took a suckling lamb and offered it for a whole burnt offering to the Lord. And Samuel cried to the Lord for Israel, and the Lord answered him." And I want you to notice in verse 10, they're in the middle of offering the sacrifice and worshiping God, lamenting before God. They're not there prepared for war. And this army's coming, and they're crying out to God. Verse 10, "Now Samuel was offering up the burnt offering, and the Philistines drew near to battle against Israel, but the Lord." You want to talk about three words that are just crucial for us to remember. But the Lord. Whenever we're facing a problem, wherever we're facing sin, whenever we're facing difficulties, we need to remember, no matter how unfavorable it may look, how bad things may look, but the Lord is our helper. Remember that. And notice what it says here. "But the Lord thundered with a great thunder on that day against the Philistines and confused them so that they were routed before Israel." So that instead of having to defeat them on their own, God shook that army up, drove them out, and the Israelites were able to attack them and win this great victory. "The men of Israel went out of Mizpah and pursued the Philistines and struck them down as far as below Bethkar. Then Samuel took a stone and set it between Mizpah and Shen and named it Ebenezer," stone of help. So when you're singing that song, "Ebenezer, stone of help," that's what that song means, saying, "Thus far the Lord has helped us." Yahweh has helped us. Yahweh is our helper. "So the Philistines were subdued and they did not come anymore within the border of Israel. And the hand of the Lord was against the Philistines all the days of Samuel." And so they're rescued, helped by God, who is their shield. But the important thing for us to remember is that this was a foretaste of the blessing and the rescue and the help that is coming through Jesus Christ, through the ultimate descendant of Abraham, the one who would bring the blessing to all the nations of the world, including us, Jesus Christ. And that takes us to the verse in the song. We sang this, We sang the song, "Here I Raise My Ebenezer." Ebenezer or Ebenezer. Hither by thy help I come, and I hope by thy good pleasure safely to arrive at home. And notice here, and I thought about this when Brady was teaching class this morning. God is a seeking God. Jesus sought me when a stranger, wandering from the fold of God. He to rescue me from danger, interposed his precious blood. And so the ultimate help that God was looking to and pointing to in all of these Old Testament passages is Jesus coming and offering his blood for us to rescue us from the power of sin and Satan. In fact, in Hebrews chapter 2, you know, I've said this a number of times, I'll say it again. Hebrews chapter 2 is one of my favorite passages, especially in verse 10, where bringing many sons to glory, talking about Jesus winning the victory, defeating Satan. And I want you to notice what he says in verse 16. Verse 16 says this, "For assuredly he does not give help to angels, but he gives help to the descendant of Abraham." So even when he's not specifically quoting a passage, the New Testament is just filled with allusions and connections back to the Old Testament. So God gives help to the descendant of Abraham. Through Christ, we become the descendant of Abraham, the child of God, and through the help that God provides. And a help that God provides often by crushing his enemies. So, that's God, our helper. And there's so much more we could look at, but let's wrap up with a discussion of how we can then image God as helpers. What are some things that we can do as individuals that make us helpers in the image of God? And of course, we can't die for anybody's sins. Jesus was the only one who could do that. But there are some things that we can do, and one of those is found, or two of them are found in Ephesians chapter 6. Turn over to Ephesians 6, and I want us to notice there where it talks about the armor of God. In Ephesians chapter 6, Paul's describing the armor of God, and I was listening to somebody the other day, and they made a good point. He said, you read that, and you may have heard them describe, well, Paul's sitting there, and he's in a Roman prison, he's chained to a Roman jailer, and he's looking at the Roman's armor, and is, you know, kind of copying that. But this preacher said, no, this is the armor of God. You go back to the Old Testament and all the descriptions of God, many of which we have not had time to cover and won't have time to cover. He's describing the armor. This is God's armor. God is giving His armor to us to help us. Verse 10, he says, "Finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of His might." So this is about God and God standing for us and helping us. "Put on the full armor of God so that you will be able to stand firm against the schemes of the devil. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places." So there are forces against us that God alone can give us the power to fight against. "Therefore, take up the full armor of God so that you will be able to resist and the evil day, and having done everything to stand firm." And then he begins to describe the armor. Skip down to verse 18, and this is our first point here of how we can image God as helpers. Prayer warriors. Look at verse 18. "With all prayer and petition, pray at all times in the Spirit, and with this in view, be on the alert with all perseverance and petition for all the saints." We talked about this before, the idea of praying for other people and making sure that we do so on a regular basis. And I used this illustration just the other day. Use the church directory as a prayer list. So let me ask you, I said this I think 2 weeks ago. Have you been doing that? Have you taken the church directory and started with Karen Albee? And worked your way through, all the way through the C's. You might get stuck in the C's. There's a lot of C's in there. And then through the M's. And then all the way to the end. Do you do that? I recommend you start doing that. On a regular basis. Maybe set aside one day a week. Or it wouldn't take long to do it every day. But just set aside time to go through the directory and think of every single person that is a member here that is a part of this congregation and pray for them. and think about them. Do I know this person as well as I do? If I don't, then fix that. But if I do know this person and I know that they're struggling with illness or with emotional distress or with anxiety or depression or age-related decline or those kind of things, think about them and begin thinking, okay, what can I do to assist this person? What is within my means? Obviously, you can't do what you can't do. So think of the things that you're able to do for them. And then go to that person and ask two questions. Two simple questions. What do you need? And how can I help you? Do that. That's a helper. How can I help you? And it may not be something you can do. But if it's not something you can do, you can still pray for them. Or maybe you'll know, well, you know what? I can't help you with that, but I know somebody that can. Thinking about people. And when we ask, listen. Listen, get the wax out of the ears. This is, and guys, we're bad about this. Don't debate, argue, or minimize another person's feelings or needs. Because there's a tendency, and I've been there, that if somebody has a problem that I've never had, then you know, it can't be all that serious. It can't be that real. Yes, it is real. We don't know how bad it may be for them. So accept their explanation of how bad it is for them. And this goes for things like emotional distress, depression, anxiety, mental health issues. There's a tendency, and I've seen brethren sometimes make the point or make the argument that mental health, the Christian should never have a mental health problem, should never need depression medication or anxiety medication or any of those things. And I want to tell you something, if you hear a person say that, tell them, stop saying stupid stuff. Because it's real. Be thankful that they can get the help and encourage them and pray for them. So that's one way we can help. Second way continues on in verses 18 and 19. With all prayer and petition, pray at all times in the Spirit, and with this in view, be on the alert with all perseverance and petition for all the saints, verse 18, and pray on my behalf, verse 19, that utterance may be given to me in the opening of my mouth to make known with boldness the mystery of the gospel, for which I am an ambassador in chains, that in proclaiming it I may speak boldly as I ought to speak. And so we can be images of God as helpers by wielding the sword of truth, being sword of truth warriors, praying for people that they will speak the word of God, and praying that God will strengthen us when we're in situations where we have an opportunity to be an image of God and speak up for God. And where it might not be all that comfortable, and there might be some opposition, and there might be some people that may make fun of us or want to argue with us and tell us we don't know what we're talking about, pray that we'll have the brave heart and the gumption to speak and speak boldly, gently, kindly, but boldly the truth of God's Word. Pray for open doors, open mouths, open hearts, and an allegiance to the truth. And then there's a third one that's somewhat unique because it really kind of only applies to half the group here. And that is the wife as a warrior alongside of her husband. You know, in Genesis chapter 2, verses 18 and 20, when it says God makes a helper suitable for the man, the idea sometimes is that people look at that word helper and they say, okay, second-class citizen, she's the one that's down on the floor scrubbing the floors and working. She's not as important as the man. That's not what that passage is talking about. Yes, there is a role, relationship role there that's described in Ephesians 5, the submission role of submission and leadership. But it doesn't mean that somehow or another that this helper now is a second-class citizen. She is suitable for him. She fits his needs. And conversely, he fits her needs. They make a great pair. They work together quite well. So when God said he would make a help meet or helper suitable for Adam, he made Eve. He did not make a master to rule over Adam. He did not make a wilting flower to be hidden away in the back so nobody can see the little woman. And he didn't make a slave to serve his every need. He made a helper. One who would stand beside her husband and work together with him in the fight against Satan and sin. They are to be joined together as one flesh, not just physically but spiritually and mentally as they work together. That's how a wife can be a helper as God. They can model to the world how wives are supposed to be. And we need godly women and wives acting as warriors alongside their husband. Well, there's just so much more we could cover, but we're out of time. Getting ready to sing a song of invitation in a moment, but let's just ask this question. Are you a living image of God? Are you a person who, when the world sees you, they see a helper? They see all these other names that we went over. They see God in your life as the kind of person that God has called to be His and serves as your shield as you serve as the shield for your brothers and sisters and your spiritual family. If you're not, if we can help you become a child of God today through repentance and baptism, or maybe you're just somebody here that needs to fine-tune that image. Maybe you're looking at the image and saying, it's a little out of focus. I need to get this part a little more sharply in focus. If we can help you do that, please turn to Jesus for help and let us help you come to Him while we stand and sing.